In the previous video in this series, we examined the so-called Mexican miracle and the reasons behind the 1994 peso crisis. Here we're going to discuss what kind of options the Mexican government had in December of 1994, a couple of crucial errors that officials made in the aftermath of the crisis. The Mexican government had no easy options in December 1994. In general, even when it's obvious that an exchange rate peg needs to be abandoned, governments balk at doing so, and Mexico was no exception. Keeping the peso pegged at a fixed rate was a cornerstone of the Mexican reform program, and scrapping it would not only precipitate a crisis, it would also cast doubt about whether other reforms would be successful. Government officials might have worried that panicked investors would drive the value of the peso to much lower than its long-run equilibrium level and spark inflation. Defending the exchange rate peg, however, brought heavy costs. To do so, especially with reserves so low, the government would have to significantly increase interest rates they were paying. This would throw the economy into a recession, harm an already vulnerable banking system, and possibly be futile in the end. That is, if the peso really was overvalued, then the government would be merely delaying the inevitable, and in the meantime, heaping more costs on the economy. Lastly, and this is what Mexican authorities first attempted, the government could try to reset the value of the peg at a new devalued level that would be consistent with the peso's long-run equilibrium rate, whatever that may be. However, a devaluation itself could bring a crisis of confidence among investors, and the devalued peg could come under renewed speculative attack. Making all this much more difficult was the fact that such a large portion of Mexico's foreign debt was denominated in dollars, the so-called peso bonos. The lack of foreign exchange reserves almost certainly meant the government was going to have to default on these debts, which would bring more uncertainty, recriminations, and possibly legal battles with creditors. On December 21st of that year, the government lost $4.5 billion in central bank reserves as investors moved money to other countries. The next day, with foreign reserves now less than $6 billion in total, the country was days away from having to declare default on their dollar-denominated bonds. The president-elect, Ernesto Zedillo, asked the finance minister for his recommendation. He said the only option was to float the peso. The two immediately set up a meeting with 95-year-old Fidel Velasquez, the longtime leader of the CTM, to get labor unions to agree to a 6-month wage freeze to hold off inflation. Velasquez agreed. Once they had that in place, the finance minister called for a meeting of the Pacto, which consisted of business leaders, labor leaders, and top government officials. The idea was again to find a way to make sure that inflation did not take off with the decision to float the peso. In the words of Andres Oppenheimer, that is when the new Zedillo government began to make a string of blunders that, mixed with a dose of bad luck, turned a critical situation into a financial debacle. The first mistake that the Mexican government made was that they discussed the possibility of floating the peso, which would clearly result in a devaluation. One top official, Jesus Silva Herzog, put it well when he argued, quote, "It's the first time in history that a devaluation was consulted on. You don't discuss a devaluation with anybody, not even your wife." It wasn't the regularly scheduled time for a Pacto meeting, and this, combined with the fact that the meeting was called for 8 o'clock at night, led many to realize the government was in dire straits. Before the actual Pacto meeting began, top business leaders began withdrawing peso deposits and moving them abroad. And the urgent meeting was in no way secret. Reporters were waiting in front of the building for participants to arrive. During the meeting of the Pacto, the head of the central bank and the treasury secretary conceded that the country was running out of foreign reserves and might have to float the currency. The other members of the group were adamantly against floating the peso and forced a compromise instead of a moderate devaluation by expanding the exchange rate ban. But the fact that the government led on how dire things were made business leaders eager to dump their pesos. According to Oppenheimer again, some even excused themselves from the Pacto meeting for brief periods to call their brokers to sell pesos. A day after the announcement of the Pacto meeting, there was $4 billion of capital flight from the country, and the stock market value plummeted. There was only one option left, and that was to float the currency. Much of Wall Street was taken by surprise by the devaluation. The Mexican government hadn't been very transparent in that it only disclosed the level of foreign reserves 3 times a year, but in October they had supposedly equaled $17 billion. The finance minister, Jaime Serra, faced an angry crowd of investors in New York on December 22nd, who in the course of the previous 24 hours had lost 15% of their money invested in Mexican bonds. They wanted to know why the Mexican government hadn't let them know about the devaluation. Serra responded that, quote, "devaluations are not announced in advance." While this was true, that was little consolation to investors who would go on to lose to more than 30% of the value of their investments in coming months. The value of the peso fell precipitously after the announcement that the exchange rate peg was being abandoned. The Mexican government also lost its good reputation in financial markets, and hence its access to foreign credit markets. The day before the devaluation, the government had sold $416 million worth of bonds. 1 week later, it could only sell $28 million, and interest rates had to go way up just to be able to sell those bonds. The peso-denominated bond auction didn't go well either, which brings up another interesting point. While many blamed the financial crisis on foreign investors fleeing the country, most of the capital flight was actually from Mexicans themselves. Oppenheimer notes that, quote, inflows of foreign portfolio capital into Mexico in 1994 were considerably lower than in the previous year, but they still totaled $8.2 billion. In January of the new year, the Mexican government let Washington know that it needed, quote, a clear sign of U.S. support, or they would have to default on their dollar-denominated bonds. There weren't enough votes in Congress to get a bailout for Mexico passed, so President Clinton, in a controversial move, bypassed the legislative branch and resorted to using money from the Exchange Stabilization Fund to loan to Mexico. The total loan equaled $51 billion, with $20 billion of that coming from the U.S., another $18 billion from the IMF, and $13 billion from the Bank for International Settlements and various commercial banks. The Mexican government was required to put up oil revenues as collateral and promised to follow sound financial practices, like limiting money and credit expansion. So why did Clinton think it was in the U.S.'s best interest to help Mexico? Well, one, Mexico imported a lot of American-made goods, so a recession in Mexico would also hurt the U.S. economy. Two, financial crisis could easily spark political instability in a country that shares a long border with the U.S. This could also spur more illegal immigration northward. And finally, there was the fear of contagion. Mexico is a large developing country, and a financial meltdown there could easily spread to other countries in the region, which in turn would be harmful to U.S. interests. Others argued against a bailout, saying that a bailout would encourage irresponsible financial policies because the cost of such behavior was being lessened by the bailout. In Alan Greenspan's mind, though, a Mexican default would have, quote, unacceptably severe consequences, and thus the benefits were greater than the costs. Should be noted that in the end, Mexico paid back the U.S. loan in full, ahead of schedule, and the U.S. government made $500 million in interest. You can see from this figure that the peso continued to devalue in the early parts of 1994, finally reaching its bottom in March at around 7.5 pesos to the dollar. At that time, government officials announced a new stability and austerity program, and the deep slide was stopped, at least until the end of the year when the peso started losing value again. The devaluation raised the price of imports, which in turn sent inflation rates to almost 50% in 1994. Along with higher inflation came higher nominal interest rates, which stressed an already vulnerable banking system and eventually led to the 1995 banking crisis. While the short-term effects of the peso crisis were severe, recovery actually came pretty quickly. Between 95 and 97, unemployment fell from 8% to 3%, and GDP grew at around 6% on average. 85% of Mexico's exports went to the U.S., and with the passage of NAFTA and the booming U.S. economy, the value of exports went up by 92% in the 5 years after the crisis. Foreign direct investment also significantly increased. In the 8 years before the crisis, there was an average of about $3 billion worth of FDI in the Mexican economy every year. In the 4 years after the crisis, FDI averaged $10.6 billion a year. Inflation eventually came down to 8.5% in 1999, and foreign reserves climbed from $6.1 billion in 94 to over $30 billion at the end of 2000. Two great sources on the peso crisis are again Sebastian Edwards, 1998, The Mexican Peso Crisis, How Much Did We Know and When Did We Know It, and Andres Oppenheimer's Bordering on Chaos, Mexico's Rollercoaster Journey Toward Prosperity. I'd recommend both of them to understand more about Mexico during this time period. James Boughton has an excellent chapter in his 2012 book called Tearing Down Walls, the International Monetary Fund, 1990 to 1999, on what happened during the Mexican peso crisis from a distinctly IMF perspective. Also, Kouros Maskouki in 2002 looked at the aftermath of the tequila crisis in Mexico.